Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guests are Dr. David Bettenhausen and Carla Bogney-Kidd. Before I bring them on, I have just a few announcements. The premium site is back up and running. The social media site is back up, and we will have brand new premium episodes out this week. Just go to forbiddenknowledge.news or click the link in the description to start your membership. There's going to be some awesome stuff coming out on there. Right now is also the perfect time to get an emergency food supply. You never know what's coming around the next corner in 2020. You got 2021 coming. Who knows what's going to happen then? Check out Mad Patriot Supply. They are the experts in emergency preparedness. You never know what's coming around the corner these days. Right now, you get $70 off a two-week supply and $100 off a four-week. Just click that link in the description or go to preparewithfkn.com. Tonight, I want to welcome Dr. David Bettenhausen and Carla Bogney-Kidd. They have been close friends since 1998. Feeling a deeper spiritual kinship for each other, Dave and Carla had a spontaneous memories of 29 past lives together while meditating. They went on to get past life regression training with Dr. Brian Weiss. Now Dave and Carla spread the message of love and kindness and teach holistic approaches to healing. They teach meditation at their local university and senior centers. Dr. Dave was a registered nurse for 10 years before returning to medical school. He recently retired from his private practice and now serves as the vice president of medical affairs at a small Midwestern hospital. Carla recently retired as his office manager, and they now share their message together, the gift of past lives and love is the answer. Dr. Dave and Carla, welcome. How are y'all tonight?
Doing great, Chris.
Hey, Chris. Very good. Well, thank y'all for joining us. I've been looking forward to tonight. I find the possibility of reincarnation and past lives very compelling. I actually did one of my very first shows on the topic recently with Steve Burgess. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He does past life regressions.
Yes.
And he shared some fascinating information about it. But you two have actually had spontaneous past life memories together through meditation, which I find very interesting. So where I wanted to start tonight is first, how did you two meet and find out about your past lives and how you could access this through meditation?
Dave?
Whoever wants to start.
Yeah, that's okay. Actually, it all started 6 years ago. We just had the onset of electronic medical records. I was tired, grouchy, miserable. Carla can testify to that fact.
Mm-hmm.
And she was starting to worry about me in the office. And electronic medical records, when they first started, were 10, 12, 14-hour days. And so she came up and said, I'm going to get you counseling or you're going to start to meditate. And she came up and said that to me. And so what did we do? We started to meditate. And the first few days of meditation were relaxing and great. And I felt calm because I got to turn the computers off. And on about the third day, I was meditating. The office was all there. All the office girls were coming in. We got done meditating and everybody got up to go to work. And I had to go and talk to Carla. And I said, Carla, you'll probably think I've lost my mind, but I was talking to this woman and she reminds me of you. She kind of has your eyelashes from the side view. She was really happy, jovial. She had this purple cloud over her head. But she showed me a shoe. And what'd you do, Carla?
And this is something, a vision you saw in your meditation?
While I was meditating.
Yes. Okay. Well, first of all, my mother died in 1996, and Dave bought the practice in 1998. So unfortunately, he never met my mother. So when this happened, I went over to the computer, and I Googled shoes. Dancing shoes, ballroom dancing shoes. And my mother had a specific type of shoes that she wore. She was a ballroom dancer. And I said to Dave, which one? And he pointed to the exact shoes she wore her whole life. And she didn't just dance in these shoes. She wore them for dress up too. And for as long as she could until she was too old and they weren't comfortable any longer. So he picked the exact shoe out of maybe 60 or 70 pairs. That was a really good guess.
So
that is very interesting.
Yeah. So Carla thought that was kind of interesting. And I think her comment was, why did mom come to you and not me? And I really didn't know why. And, but we were kind of excited about this possibility. Now, I'm a doctor, so part of me thought maybe medical records were getting to me and I was losing my mind. But we kept meditating, trying to connect. And while we were meditating, a third or fourth, fifth, sixth, tenth, I don't know which day down the line, I got this memory.
Now, wait, before you get too far, I just want to ask, what type of meditation were you doing? How, you know, what form of meditation?
Well, soothing music, a candle, dimly lit room, you know, all the things that we thought would relax us and help us meditate better.
And so then on this day, I got this memory and I started sharing the memory with them. And it was from actually this life, when I was 3 years old. And I said, you know, my father went to graduate school. We're from Nebraska. And we drove all the way across the country to Boston.
In 1962.
Yep. And of course, Carla and her sister also worked in my office. Both looked at me and said, Boston? We were from Boston and we lived in Boston in 1962. And I said, well, it's funny. I was just remembering being on a beach in Boston in 1962, there was a Ferris wheel in the background and a roller coaster, and I was running on the beach.
And screaming.
Screaming. And she said, you were on Revere Beach. And I said, well, I don't know what beach it was. I'm 3 years old. But I said, I was running on the beach screaming, and this little girl jumped up, ran across, pushed me down, sat on my chest, and kissed me on the forehead. And I said, I don't know why I'm remembering this. Then she jumped up. She put her hands on her hips. And she said, and she didn't say anything. She just looked at me, kind of scowled. She had on this two-piece blue bathing suit with little ruffles. And then suddenly she said, be quiet. You're bothering my family. And then I heard in the background, Carla, that's not how little girls act. And what'd you say, Carla?
I did. Well, that's how I acted apparently back then. But I remembered that day, and not through meditation. I remembered that day because we were from, you know, the good Catholic family, five daughters. I was the youngest. My parents were always splitting up and getting back together again. But on that particular day in 1962, my parents had rented two cabs. We were not well off. We did not have the money to have a car. We went to Revere Beach, and when we got there, for whatever reason, I did not have a bathing suit. Normally, I inherited one from one of my sisters, but I didn't have one. So all seven of us went across the street to one of those souvenir shops, and I got my first two-piece ruffled blue bathing suit. And I remember it. I could draw pictures. That's how vivid it is. The exact color of the bathing suit, what it looked like, everything. I still can remember it to this day because my family was together, which didn't happen often, and I got my new bathing suit. So you can imagine, I had a chill at my back when Dave said this, and so did Paula, my sister. We couldn't believe it.
So you had actually met in real life back then?
Yes.
And the memory came through meditation?
Yes.
Correct. And it was 36 years later that I bought the practice. We'd never talked about it. So it's 16 years later again. And while meditating, I remember that I was on a beach with a little girl who wore a blue two-piece bathing suit, and it was Carla. Mm-hmm. Now, that kind of made us go, that's really pretty interesting. How is that even possible? But we thought, well, you know, maybe it really is possible. So we talked about that. We talked about that during meditation, I was starting to see little visions of things. I saw a Mayan temple. I saw a gold dome in Boston. I saw a line of stuffed squirrels. All this sounds strange. Until one day, actually at home, I was trying to meditate. And I was laying in bed, getting ready to fall asleep. Suddenly, I felt this thump on my chest. And I felt myself fall back. And literally, I hit the nightstand beside the bed. But I fell back, and I realized I had been shot. And I was looking over across this dark alley, and there was Carla, standing in the dark alley with a bunch of men in funny suits. Now, I'll say it's Carla. It doesn't look exactly like Carla, but I could tell from her steel blue eyes that it was Carla, and she looked like a flapper. And so the next day, I told her this story, and she looked at me like, okay, this is another one of those strange experiences you're having, but I don't know how to explain it. So we kept meditating, and I got some more details.
And of course, we're journaling all this. We're writing everything down.
Writing stuff down. And so I told her that I had met her at a wedding of a mobster named Angelo somewhere in the 1920s in Chicago's Little Italy, and that she was a flapper. I had come to this bar. I knew her name was Ruby Donaldson. I knew we met at a wedding, and I knew this guy named Angelo. And I also knew that Ruby was from Bullock, Georgia. Why I knew that, I don't know. And so what happened, Carla?
Well, then a day came when I was not at work, and he called and said, well, I've got some more details. And I thought, okay, well, I need some proof. So I got onto Ancestry.com, and didn't I find a Ruby Donaldson, born in 1904 in Bullock, Georgia, one of 11 children to James and Anna Donaldson. I could bring up, you know, a birth certificate and their marriage certificate, different things. And then I also found, in 1925, a gangster named Angelo Jenna. January the 10th of 1925, he married Lucille Spinola. And I found an additional article. It was a picture of their wedding cake. And the reason it was in the newspaper is that it was over 10 feet tall. It actually served over 3,000 probably mobsters. So I was able to find all of that proof. And I called Dave back and I said, guess what? I found this and this and this and this. You know, this is, you're not crazy, because these are names we didn't hear before. I mean, I never heard of Angelo Jenna. I had no idea that Angelo Jenna was the head mobster before Capone. Never heard it before.
Right.
And so here we are sitting there wondering about this. And I came in the next time we started to meditate. And then I started to have even more memories of that date. I remembered meeting her, dancing with her, asking her to breakfast the next day. I remembered our conversations. I remember that we got involved, and I'm telling Carla the story. And as I'm telling her the story, I literally start to feel like I'm J.J. Wright, the person I was in 1925. And as I'm telling her the story, Carla starts to finish the sentences. She has the same memory. Then we go and start to feel really uncomfortable, because actually Carla and I are not married.
We were married to other people.
Yes. And we're talking in the middle of the break room, and we're having a romantic almost conversation, and we felt really strange. And we both ran down the hall, and I started seeing patients.
And I didn't talk to him all day.
Yeah.
Wow, that is fascinating.
And so we just kept writing things down and kept meditating. We started getting bits and pieces of lessons. We found out some of the stories. We found 29 past lives together. We were so fascinated. That's why pretty soon we went and got past life regression training with Dr. Brian Weiss, because this is a world we don't know anything about that's coming to us spontaneously. And, it, you know, it just became sort of a small little obsession for us because every day we were meditating.
Obsession. It was like a huge obsession.
Yes, it became big for us. And part of our book, The Gift of Past Lives, with Mother Isabella God and Elizabeth, is sort of related to that too, because, of course, I met Carla's mother. Then there became a day when I met this other woman, and she told me her name was Isabella. And Isabella told me that she had been with me through 42 past lives for almost the last 6,000 years.
And that she is his spirit guide.
Correct. And we kept meditating, and then we met Elizabeth, who was Carla's spirit guide. And then we had one day where Carla asked me the question, so who is God anyway? And I heard the voice say, I am.
And then he got extremely emotional. And of course, he was meditating in his head. I'm not seeing or hearing what's going on. And he was so emotional. I said, what's going on? What? And he said, you won't believe what just happened. And started to explain it to Paula and I. And he said it was so spiritual. There was no doubt in his mind. He knew what was happening. He could feel it, sense it, all of the above. Something that, I mean, he's not the only one that's ever experienced God speaking to him. If you get onto any, you know, reincarnation sites, people all talk about God being there. But when you experience it, it's different than reading that someone else did it.
So what kind of communication did you have with what was called God?
Well, the first day it was just a simple I am. Most of the time the communication comes through Isabella. And Isabella says that basically she's God reaching straight out to us. So most of the time the communications and the lessons come from Isabella. Though there's been 4 or 5 times in there where God has actually came in and interrupted in the middle of a lesson, told us, yes, that's for comfort. No, you can't do that. No, you shouldn't do it this way. You can almost ask any question, and we've asked God or Isabella, and they've tried to give us the answer.
And that's why we journaled it.
Now, some of the researchers and people that I've spoken with about past lives and reincarnation and actually getting in touch with your spirit guides talk about a higher self that you can get in touch with. Is that something that you considered to be different than this God entity that you encountered?
It seems to be completely different than those people that talk about their higher self. The people that talk about a higher self believe that some part of their soul is maintained in heaven or the other side or whatever you want to call it. And parts of our experience, I can understand them, what they're saying, because, you know, our communications and lessons have been that God reaches out through this spirit guide, that the spirit guide is sort of part of God, that we're sort of part of God, but we sound like we're separate entities. And Isabella always says, you are not God. You did not create yourself. That this experience that you're having is trying to explain to you how this works.
And our spirit guide really is our higher self. They're the ones that keep us on track. They're the ones with the knowledge, giving it to us.
And at what point did you come into contact with your spirit guides? How far along in the meditations?
I'm going to say within the first 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. They just made themselves known to you? They kind of reached out to you? Or how did that happen? How did the communication begin?
Well, I told you that I had met Carla's mother. So there was a day when I was meditating in the office and I saw an eye I saw the infinity sign. I started to see lights everywhere. And the infinity sign split in half. I know it all sounds kind of, I'll say spiritual. I saw a burst of energy fly upwards. As the infinity sign split in half, I saw two eyes. One was Carla's mother, and one was Isabella. And since this was a new experience, I suddenly heard Isabella say that she was Isabella and had been with me for 6,000 years. We started asking her questions because she can I can sort of contact Isabella like within 2 seconds anymore because I'm so used to it. To start with, I kind of had to focus back and concentrate and close my eyes and shut the world out. But now it's literally, I feel like I contract my brain a little bit and there she is.
Now, you would definitely say that each and every one of us has our own guides or spirit guides with us at all times, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. And angels.
Angels, okay.
And angels, yep.
Because I recently had my first, an angelic / contact experience where I believe I had contact with one of my guides. It was a very psychic and loving communication. And
fantastic.
It changed everything. It was a great experience.
Yes.
And you mentioned that one of your guides had been with you for over 6,000 years.
So
is it possible that you have different guides through different lifetimes?
It is possible. We've been told that sometimes you'll get a different guide if for some reason the connection between the two doesn't seem to be working correctly, that you could get a different guide. You can also have really more than one guide because a lot of people will experience talking to passed over loved ones and they'll say that they're one of their guides. So it's possible that if one of your loved ones has finished this reincarnation journey, that they may take on some sort of a guide kind of role. I actually have another guide named Sheila that talks to me, who was in a past life thousands of years ago, but she has shown up again. And my understanding is that Sheila is the one who makes it most easy for me to see some of these past lives.
And everybody has a main spirit guide. That's the one that normally stays with you through all your lives. And then these other guides that come in, like he has Sheila. I had a sister that died of cancer in 1992. She actually is the one that passes over our family members now. So whatever you want to call that, she takes them from this life into the spiritual world. That's her job now. So she's a guide.
Now you decided to do some regression training with Dr. Brian Weiss. Mm-hmm. When did that start and how long did that last and how was that?
That was just a couple of years ago at the Omega Institute in New York. It was a week long and it was actually with he and his wife. Great experience, people from all over the world. It was fantastic. And the United States is backwards when it comes to regression and reincarnation. The other countries, like Chile, for instance, they sent people, social workers from hospitals that were learning to do regression therapy on end-of-life patients. To them, it's common. It's not something so strange like it is here. I mean, people think you're nutty here when you talk about reincarnation. It's a very, you know, closed, small group, unfortunately.
Anything to add to that, Dr. Dave?
Well, it was a great experience. Dr. Weiss is a truly gentle human. He's one of those people that when you talk to him, you literally feel that he cares and loves you and that he gives that kind of attention to every single person in the class. And you go through the class. Of course, he lectures some. He does some mock regressions. You've got 150 open people there. So everybody splits up. His wife starts to go around. He goes around. We start regressing people from all over the world, which is also a great experience because culturally, they look at some things differently than we do. The other thing about the Omega Institute, it's very open-minded. So they also have classes next door being done by a shaman. They have somebody teaching yoga, somebody teaching Zen meditation, somebody teaching metta meditation. And actually, metta meditation is what we taught at some of the local universities and our senior centers here, all based on loving kindness. We figure if we connected during meditation and found some peace of mind, other people could too. Now, we don't push if we teach a meditation class that you're going to meet your spirit guide. However, we do some past life regression, mostly people that we know, friends, people we've connected with through some of this work. We don't do it for a living. We just do it because it is so important that people start to realize that there's more to life than just one chance.
Are you at a crossroads in life with unanswered questions? How does your past connect to your present life? October Hallam can help you discover how your past connects to your present and is shaping your future. October is an intuitive, healer, empath, and medium with over 20 years of experience helping people navigate through some of life's greatest challenges. A recent client from Egypt says, "October is pure magic. We keep coming back for more," and recommended her to our closest friends. If you would like to book a session with October, please contact her at theancientgift222@gmail.com. And I want to talk a little bit about reincarnation. To me, sometimes it seems like this is like a training ground where our consciousness is evolving through reincarnation with each lifetime, which each lesson we learn, we grow and we go to the next stage. And I'm wondering, is there ever a time where we can exit, where we can move on from these incarnations? Can you talk a little bit about how that works?
So through all of our lessons, we've really come to the point where we realize reincarnation was really God's plan from the very beginning. We were created with potential. And with that potential, we could grow. We were also given free will. And the reason for free will is you can't love fully if it's forced or out of fear. You can only choose to love. And if it's forced upon you, you can't. So you have to have free will, which also means we can make mistakes. And so like any loving parent, God gives you chance after chance after chance to learn all the lessons. Finally, get through that sort of karmic wheel of having to learn so many lessons. When you finally figured out that the choice you have to make is a choice to love, that's your fellow man, God, everybody, and make all living choices, then you actually return back to heaven, back to God.
Steve, explain how we can do that. What are the five simple rules?
And that was one of the first things we learned from Isabella, that there's really five simple rules. Avoid conceit, jealousy, selfishness, and unforgiveness, and always love. If you make every decision based on those rules, you will overcome any karma that you've created. You will not collect any new karma, and you will get through all the lessons you need to learn. The other thing that we've kind of found as we've been going through this is we literally have to live almost every side of every issue. So we have a past life where we were Vikings and we were fighting against the Scottish, and in a next life, we are actually English fighting against the Scottish. Then we were Scottish fighting against the English. And then actually Carla was a Viking who married into the English throne, and they fought again against the Scottish. Because literally, we have to fight on both sides, because literally, every war, we're fighting ourselves. And then we learn... Go ahead, Carla.
In our first book, The Gift of Past Lives with Mother Isabella, God, and Elizabeth, we actually have 21 of our past life stories in there. And after each life, we write down what we did wrong and why we came back again. And tied, of course, to the five simple rules, what we did wrong, why we're coming back again. And I hope I'm done this time, but God only knows.
Go ahead. Oh, the other thing we kind of learned as we were going through this is we've all been black, white, rich, poor, Catholic, Christian, Muslim, Egyptian. We've lived on every side. We've lived every religion, because until you've lived the other side, you really don't quite understand. And the other thing that's true, and this is part of the theory of reincarnation, is a subconscious memory. That's how past life regression works. That's how meditation works. So if you access your subconscious, all of those past lives are in there, or the lessons you learned in all those past lives are in there. So you remember, at least subconsciously, that you've been Catholic and Muslim and Jewish and whatever. And so the other thing that's true, and this is part of Buddhist theory and part of neuroscience, is in the subconscious, we actually record things as either positive or negative. And there's a reason for that. It protects us. So the example is, if you touch fire, it burns you and it's hot. So you remember that. So the next time you feel fire, your hand pulls back faster. And that's part of the science that's behind this, is the subconscious we can get to. And the subconscious shares and saves these memories so you don't have to relive them all.
He also wrote about atonement and the time between lives. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
If you've done any work in reincarnation or even near-death experiences, many people have a time between life where they do a past life review. And that's really the period of atonement. You actually go before a council or people who've already passed over, and your spirit guides, and God, if he feels that it's necessary. You discuss, you see what you've done wrong in your past lives. You actually feel and get some compassion, because you feel what those people that you put through something felt like. So if you hurt somebody's feelings, you feel their pain when their feeling was hurt. And I've actually had what I call a privilege, because my father died a few years ago, to get to see part of his past life review. And it's interesting when you get to experience that. My father had a past life where he was a slave trader, where he delivered slaves in the hull of his boat, chained. He separated mothers from their children. And in the very next life, his daughter was kidnapped and killed, and his wife died in childbirth, so he was literally split from his wife and children. And in his very next life, he was my father, and he got Parkinson's at a very young age and spent 20 years of his life chained to a wheelchair. And that's where you start to see some of the reality of how this works.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I've heard a lot of people talk about the kind of life review, and some say that you can even choose the type of path or life that you would like to live. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, from our experiences, you might get some choices, but your choices are limited. Free will really exists when you get back here. And as much as people believe that they get to make a choice, I think the reality is Here's an example. If I choose someone to be my son and they don't choose me to be their father, who wins? Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if there are 7 million moving parts to this life experience currently on Earth, who gets to make those moving parts work? If there's not a great architect, I don't know how this works out. People talk about soul contracts, and then they talk about they came back in their next life and they broke the contract. Because who would enforce the contract if there's no God, no higher spirit, no somebody who keeps track and tries to make this match up and work? Which again leads us to Carla and my case is somehow me and Carla have done some things right together because God keeps allowing us to reincarnate together 29 out of my 42 lives, 29 out of the 34 lives of hers. So the lessons that we keep learning together, we've sort of become what a lot of people understand as family mates. She's been my mother, my sister, my wife, my lover, in lots of different lives.
Your neighbor.
Or just my neighbor, my friend. And so as we've experienced this, it starts to become beautiful because we understand that we are family mates. Somehow we're going to keep returning. And we found lots of our other friends.
No, I don't want to keep returning. I want to be done.
But that's because we keep returning together because we hope we're going to get it right this time.
I hope so. Yeah.
Now, what are your thoughts on the possibilities of multiple realities occurring at once? And on top of that, that we have this collective consciousness that we all kind of share. And if that's the case, could we possibly be tapping into each other's past lives or past lives of other people's through this kind of collective consciousness that we have, if you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And I think the tapping into a large total consciousness is possible. That could even explain why there are 12 Marilyn Monroes and 7 Elvises and all of these things. We may be tapping into some sort of collective group, the Akashic record as people talk about it, that there is some part of this experience that may become shared.
And why it becomes shared on the imprint.
Oh, and the other choice is part of our lessons is we all have to experience lessons to continue to grow. It's possible, and we've been told that some people during their atonement or past life review don't understand exactly what lesson they're supposed to learn. So they maybe showed an example. And so the example could be that you were Marilyn Monroe and you took too many drugs and you got lost control of yourself. And
you were like Marilyn Monroe.
You were like Marilyn Monroe. Mm-hmm. So when you get a past life regression, that subconscious memory may be there. Because I think there can only be one Marilyn Monroe. Now, you did ask another interesting question, Chris, and that was about multiple realities. I could get a little bit into quantum physics discussions if you really want. It's way more complicated than we like because it sort of gets away from the message. But quantum physics says that these multiple possibilities are splits at every change in decision. So it's not one life, it's two lives, then 10,000, then 44 million lives, and it spreads out. And quantum physics believes that these multiple universes, since they're a separate universe, is not entangled with your current universe. And so if someone who looks like you is in another universe. It is no longer you. It no longer has the same experience. It no longer affects your universe. So the reality is, it is only the you and the universe that you experience that matters. So in all reality, it doesn't matter what quantum physics says, because your only reality is your timeline.
Very well said. Anything to add to that, Carla?
No, I normally let him go on and on about that part. He usually takes it out a lot further, but I think he did pretty good.
All right, fair enough. Yeah. Now, I asked this question to Steve Burgess, and he had some very fascinating answers. I asked him about past lives as animals or insects or even past lives off planet. What are your thoughts about this?
I know that a lot of people during past life regression have some of these memories. The very reason researchers don't research them is it's impossible on adults to determine yet which part is fantasy and which part is not. However, I'm sure Steve may have mentioned this. However, I think that sometimes even people's fantasy during past life regression can heal present day concerns. And so even if they think they're from another planet, the situation on that planet that they go through is teaching them a lesson. So past life regression, even if you find a client that goes to somewhere that doesn't seem to be reality, they're still working out something subconsciously that has surfaced that's a problem that they need to heal. So I think past life regression can be a great healing tool for a lot of people, even if it's somewhere else. The researchers in past lives and on reincarnation believe that reincarnation is probably an evolutionary step in mankind. It's probably related to some sort of receptors in our brain that we haven't identified that allows this conscious stream to attach to our physical body. And if that's true, it's unlikely that cross-species reincarnation occurs. So we really can't be from another planet. We really can't be an animal. And as we've experienced, we've seen our past animals in heaven during meditation, because animals really live on this instinct. They don't get to make choices as such, or at least it's very limited for animals.
They don't have karma.
They don't have karma. They don't have a lesson to learn. They're really loving creatures and or hunters and or whatever they were created to be. And so when they're done, they go over the horizon or to heaven or whatever you would like to call it. And they have their own area and they only have one life, and they don't have to go through this turmoil, if you want to call it turmoil, but they don't have to learn the lessons because their ability to reason is less.
But God sometimes sends one of their relatives in another life to you. Dave had a cat that actually went back. It was like, I don't know, 20. Oh, actually, it's JJ in 1925. Yep. He had a cat named Oswald. And we had a cat a couple of years ago named Topher, who was, I don't know how many times removed, related. And we actually
20, have a cat. 28. 28.
Yeah, 28 times. And we actually have a cat right now. Her name is Lucina. And she is related to a life we had in Egypt many years ago. And of course, we're not making this up. This is what our spirit guide told us. We wouldn't have come up with this on our own.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that when we were at the Omega Institute, I actually regressed a woman from Guatemala. And I took her back to the spiritual world. She was under the impression that she was from another planet. And the reason our spirit guides explained to us later that she believed that is because there's crystal and colors and bright lights, and it didn't seem like anything earthly. So it would be easy to assume that it's another planet. But when you're in the spiritual world, you have the spectrum of all the angel colors and lots of light energy. And it's different than it is here. And we don't look like we do here. They show themselves to us like we will understand it, but we're just a ball of energy. So it'd be easy to understand or think we look like aliens. I just explain it simply. Dave takes it out to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to kind of get past something that me and that Steve and I discussed a little bit. He probably has a completely different view on this than you, and I am still completely on the fence about it. But there are some researchers that believe in some sort of they call it a white light trap, to where when you go to the white light after you die, that it's really just a trap to get you sucked back here, to put your soul back on Earth, that it's under some sort of malevolent control, and you're not supposed to really go to the white light. You're supposed to turn away from it and go a different direction. I'd just like to get your thoughts on this theory.
Okay, so, Chris, I don't believe there's a white light trap. We have guides that purposely help us, and I've experienced some of these deaths, and each death, I get a small hand of a little black girl who takes my hand and lifts me up, and I feel myself flying through Earth, past Earth, through space, time, and it's beautiful, and it's loving, and it's closer to the experience that I read that most people have with a near-death experience. And so I don't believe there's any trap. And you have a few days or small period of time, supposedly 3 days, that it does take you to kind of adapt to this. So you may feel uneasy trying to adapt to your spiritual self, but I don't think you ever feel trapped.
No, because the NDEers always say the same thing. They did not want to come back to Earth. They wanted to stay, and they saw the white light. They went through the tunnel, but they wanted to.
Now, do you think that out-of-body experiences or astral travel can be somewhat related to what you're doing with this meditation, accessing these past lives?
I think absolutely. I've had a couple of those experiences, and I think the real part of that experience is, you know, no part of you physically travels. So you're going on this mental trip, and part of those mental trips, I've seen places that I've had past lives. It appears that I'm almost flying over them. So I believe there is that experience. I know that it's Sheila who supposedly helped me be able to do that. So some sort of connection to the spiritual world. I don't know that it matters, except that it's a very interesting experience. I think it's much like that experience that some of the NDE people have. I know Carla had an experience where she was sleeping and suddenly she was above her bed and looked down and saw the dog laying next to her and those kind of things. So they're interesting experiences. And that's about all I could say at the moment.
Anything to add about that, Carla?
No, I mean, when it happened to me, I have a friend who tells me she does that every night. And when it happened to me, I thought, wow, that was wild. I think it's them just getting a hold of your mind and your soul. And, you know, because we talk to them when we sleep. They talk to us all night long. That's how we learn. So I think that's what it is. It's us talking to them. Dreams are just us trying to work through everything. But when we have these visions that are so vivid, it's them. They're talking to us. They're helping us.
And Chris, that's another one of those things, because I'm a doctor, that I always get excited about, is when you meditate, you go through beta and theta waves. When you're falling asleep, you go through beta and theta waves. When you're being hypnotized, you go through beta and theta waves. And so in your mind. So all of this stuff seems to be pretty consistent. So when our experience happened through meditation, and then we got regression training, and our experience sort of matched there, it keeps matching the science, and it matches even what the researchers are saying. You know, they found 2,000 kids who couldn't have fantasy, who had spontaneous memories when they're 2, 3, 4 years old. The guy in India who says, I was married to Gene Smith, whatever the name was, in town so-and-so. And they travel to that town. They find Gene Smith. They find the house. They open the door. A lady comes to the door, and he goes, hi, Gene. Do you remember when I buried the money under the floorboard? And Gene says, no. And the kid runs up the stairs, turns right, runs into his bedroom, points to the floorboard. They pull the floorboard up, and there's $4,000. It's pretty hard to say the three-year-old was coached.
Right.
And it's pretty hard that those memories were made up. Mm-hmm. So when they study those kind of things, they have 30 or 40 cases in the United States. They do have more in India because they're not afraid to encourage those in their children. You know, in the United States, if your daughter says, you weren't my father last time, usually you discourage it. Mm-hmm. But there, if they say, you weren't my father last time, they say, well, who was your father? And so then they get a name. And so the researchers like Ian Stevenson, Jim Matlock, all have looked at those kind of cases, and they've got a sort of a science principle set up that there has to be traits that match and languages that match and names that match and dates and times that match. And then they call it a verified case. And they have about 2,000 of those cases that they found in the research.
Wow. Now, to end on tonight, we got a few more minutes left. I'd like to hear some of the what you've come across, the most profound healing effects from past life regressions that you've that you've come across.
Well, for us, we found a young lady who was deathly scared of enclosed places and also scared of fire. And we found a past life where she was in a fire and had to jump out a window. And we found, interestingly enough, in this life, the fear started when she was an infant and was placed in a
toddler.
In an oxygen tent. And when she was taken out of the oxygen tent, which was this enclosed place, she deeply smelled cigarette smokes on her parents. And from that moment on, she was petrified. Going through the past life regression, that went away. Those kind of experiences, a lot of people have. I think some of the important things that we need to kind of share right at the very end is, when you think about everything you do in this life, make sure you make a decision based on love. And then I want you to think a little bit about the other lesson, which is, if you look at the world today, it might be becoming slightly more peaceful than it was during World War II and those time frames, but we still have a pretty violent world, a lot of hate, a lot of hate speech. We are not taking care of the planet. We're leaving trash everywhere. And frequently we say, what kind of world are we leaving to our children? But if you believe in reincarnation, you need to start to realize this is the world you're leaving yourself.
Yes, definitely. Well said. And before we move on to from the healing aspects, what are some of the things that regressions may help you with? You know, you mentioned like a phobia. What are some other examples of some things that they might help with?
Phobias.
I had, as a child, a recurring dream of like either jumping or being pushed or something, and landing in the water. And I opened my eyes and it frightened me. Well, I found out that through all of this, finding out about Ruby Donaldson, without giving too many details, because I don't want to give it away in the book, her demise, she ended up being in the water, being thrown in the water. And our guides tied that together for us and said, well, that's why you had that recurring dream. So early in my childhood for many years, because I remembered that life. That was just in 1925, or actually 1926, that that happened. And then in this life, I kept having that dream. Interesting.
That is very interesting.
Yeah. So, yes, a lot of phobias, a lot of anxieties, sometimes difficulty with your spouse, if whether they're the same spouse or not. If you had problem with your spouse in a past life and they died, you might feel like you could become abandoned in this life. We know a young woman whose husband is about to be deployed, and she had that same concern. In a past life, he was deployed and didn't return. So those kind of regression healing can happen frequently.
And before go ahead, Carla.
Well, and if you can tie it together for them, it's rather simple. And sometimes they just don't even see it. Like Dave's in my past life, I had a fear of heights in this life. And in our past life together, the two of us as brother and sister fell to our death. We were 4 and 6 years old from a 3-story staircase. And in this life, I didn't like heights. And that continued until I started to understand this. And now I challenge myself. I understand. I'm infinite.
Very cool. Well, Carla and Dr. Dave, thank you so much for coming on. I know you have a new book coming out. It's called Hell No Reincarnation. You mm-hmm. want to give us a little teaser about that one?
If you can imagine.
It's out.
It's out. It did. It came out. If you can imagine, Carla and I were both raised Catholic. And so this is a little bit against the normal teachings of the Catholic Church. So we started out to write a book trying to reconcile our Catholic upbringing with what we learned about reincarnation. So we did a lot of Bible research. We did a lot of research on various religions. And part of the story in there is no hell. And we actually go through various places that they've called hell, and including, it used to be called Hades if you were Greek. It was Sheol if you were Jewish. Well, Sheol is actually the land of atonement. And if you look at the whole church doctrine, which includes things like you either go to heaven or hell. However, even the Catholic Church used to take payments called indulgences that you could pay after your loved one died to change their what happened. Well, if they've already gone to hell, I don't think you can pay $500 and then they are suddenly in heaven. And why do we all pray for our loved ones if it's too late because they've already gone to hell? Some of those kind of things are discussed in there. Plus, we also have 6 or 7 more past lives that talk about some of the conflicts that occur, including group karma and war. And so we explain a lot of realistic things, why we need to look at some of those things, and even where reincarnation was, to some extent, written out of the Catholic Church doctrine. Somewhere around the year 200 AD to 400 AD.
And when we wrote book one, we lost some family members and friends because they don't understand or believe in reincarnation because of their religious upbringing. So reconciling with book two, we were hoping to show some of those people, if they would read this book, that there's research out there. There's proof out there. It's not just us. You know, we're not taking crazy pills. It's out there. You can read it.
Very cool. And if people want to find out more, give us any websites where they can get your books, stuff like that.
Our website is thegiftofpastlives.com. We have a Facebook page, Mother Isabella God and Elizabeth. And Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, Dr. Dave and Carla, thank you so much for coming on. There's a lot more we can talk about, and I'd love to have you guys back on in the future sometime.
Thank you. We'd love to come.
That'd be great. We have so many life stories that we could share.
Great. That sounds great. You guys have a great night.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.